We are very grateful for the privilege of being here. Thank you for inviting us. We always love to come to California. My motives are not always perfectly clean in accepting invitations to California, since my only child lives out here with all her 8 children. So we come here as often as we can. But thank you so much for the privilege of being in Hope Chapel. My topic this morning is a transformed mind. A transformed mind. And the crucial passage is from Romans 12, verses 1 and 2. I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Now, you've been singing worship and praise to the Lord. Have you thought about the fact that the offering up of your body, this literal physical body, whether old or young, tall or short, fat or thin, white or black or whatever color, this body is the one and only body in which you and I can glorify God and which we have to offer to Him. And to me, it's very important and interesting to remember that this physical body becomes an act of spiritual worship. Seems like a contradiction, doesn't it? We don't think of physical things as having anything very spiritual about them. It is an act of spiritual worship. Then verse 2, do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. From whom do we take our cues today? Is it from TV, movies, popular culture, music? Well, I think it's a great struggle for us. It always has been a struggle for Christians not to conform to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of their minds. But if anything, it's perhaps worse. It seems to me, as an old woman, much, much worse than it used to be. And I guess old folks have always been complaining about, well, it was never like this when we grew up. Well, I think it's true. It never was. But it's the same Lord, yesterday, today, and forever. And He wants you and me to know Him in such a way that our whole mindset and thinking will be transformed by the renewing of His mind. My brother Dave told me a story about how one day he was alone in the city of Philadelphia, and he saw a very attractive marquee over what looked like a pretty sleazy movie. And he thought, well, I've never seen any of that kind of movies, and nobody around here knows me. Maybe I'll just go in. And the great legacy that our parents gave us was hymns, not choruses, not praise songs, but hymns. And I'm so glad that we sang that beautiful hymn, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, this morning. But the Holy Spirit of God immediately brought to my brother Dave's mind the words of a hymn. The title of it is, O Jesus, I Have Promised. And this is the stanza that was crucial for the transforming of his mind at that very strong, tempting moment. Oh, let me feel thee near me. The world is ever near. I see the sights that dazzle. The tempting sounds I hear. My foes are ever near me, without me and within. But Jesus, draw thou nearer and keep my soul from sin. I don't need to add that he didn't go in. There were two powerful forces drawing him. Thank God the more powerful one won, because he was willing to listen. The Spirit of God. You know, God is going to allow us to walk straight into sin, knowingly, deliberately. But he also is going to speak in that still small voice. And he's asking you and me today, will you allow me to transform your thinking, to change it? We have the prince of this world who is our ancient foe, and he seeks to work us woe. He is always up to something, trying to draw us away with tremendous power. But we have a more tremendous power drawing us to himself, as you've been singing about again and again. And they have a radically different message, don't they? Our God and his enemy and our enemy, Satan. I'd like us to look at Matthew 16, 12 to 26. Sorry, not 12, 21. Matthew 16, 21 to 26. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. I think Peter said just what you and I probably would have been tempted to say. Never, Lord, he said, this shall never happen to you. His Lord and Savior was going to be killed. But Jesus turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. Then Jesus said to his disciples, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And if there is any concept today which is absolutely disgusting and ridiculous to the world, it is the idea of denying ourselves. We are being told all the time, you're supposed to love yourself. You're supposed to work on your self-esteem. You're supposed to build up your self-image. Nothing could be more diametrically opposed to what the Bible says. Give up your right to yourself. Deny yourself, and then you will be in a position to take up the cross and follow me. Verse 25, for whoever wants to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for me will find it. What good will it be for a man if he gains the whole world, yet forfeits his soul? The mindset of the world is save yourself, avoid suffering at any cost, do your own thing. Ever heard any of this? We're always being told to do our own thing. Oh, don't let anybody tell you what to do. You know, we're free. We can do anything we want. Now, which are we going to choose? I had a letter from a young mother, which I brought along. I get a good many letters through my radio broadcast. And incidentally, if you're not familiar with my daily radio broadcast, Gateway to Joy, I don't know if it's heard in this area on the radio, but any of you who have computers can get it on the internet. And I will give you the address. It's www.gatewaytojoy, and there are no capitals and no hyphen, no spaces in Gateway to Joy. That's all one word, .org, O-R-G, www.gatewaytojoy.org. And if there is a station in the area that you can hear my program from, I'd like to hear about it. Is there? I see some people nodding. Can somebody tell me what the station is? KFSG 96.3. I'm hearing it from all sides here. At what time in the morning? 9:35, somebody said, or 9:30 p.m. Thank you. Everybody got that? Well, this is one of the letters. She said that she's telling me that the Lord had given her a baby by adoption after their prayers had not been answered for one by the biological process. And she said, but I still struggled with thoughts of wanting to pursue a career, only instead of a secular career, I want to be in, quote, ministry. My dreams include being on the mission field or writing some great Christian book that will impact millions of lives for Christ. But your letter, your gatekeeper letter, which is something that comes to radio listeners, helped me. It said the routines of housework and of mothering may be seen as a kind of death. Stick with me now. It is appropriate that they should be, for they offer the chance day after day to lay down one's life for others. Then they are no longer routines. By being done with love and offered up to God with praise, they are thereby hallowed as the vessels of the tabernacle were hallowed. Not because they were different from other vessels in quality or function, but because they were offered to God. A mother's part in sustaining the life of her children and making it pleasant and comfortable is no triviality. It calls for self-sacrifice and humility, but it is the root, as was the humiliation of Jesus, to glory. And I personally have been deeply helped and strengthened spiritually through the writings of an amazing Irish missionary to India. She went to India back in the 1890s. She stayed there for 57 years without ever taking a furlough back to Ireland. And her name was Amy Carmichael. And she established an amazing work for the rescue of little children in South India. And she tells about the young Indian Christian women who worked with her. She says this: they were learning that if the Lord of Glory took a towel and knelt on the floor to wash the dusty feet of his disciples, and that was the job of the lowest slave in an Eastern household, then no work, even the relentless and often messy routine of caring for squalling babies, is demeaning. No work is demeaning. To offer it up to the Lord of Glory transforms it into a holy task. Have you thought about that when you go into the laundry room with all those dirty diapers? Have you thought about that as you iron your husband's shirts? Have you thought about that as you scrub the pots and pans? And you single women, many of you, I suppose, work in an office. Perhaps you have a boss who is anything but gentle and kind and friendly. And you're sitting there day after day, working on a computer perhaps, filing stuff, who knows what boring routine you may have to be doing. Of course, I don't know one single person in this room, so I don't know anything about your routines. But did you know that it can be transformed into something glorious as an offering to Jesus Christ? People have said to me sometimes, oh, it must be wonderful to be able to write books. One girl said to me, I believe the Lord's called me to do just exactly what you do, Mrs. Elliott. And I said, and what's that? And she said, oh, she said, you get to write books and you travel all over the place and it must be so exciting. Well, it's wonderful. And I'm certainly not going to tell the poor girl that it's a miserable job. I have been given tremendous privileges. But do you think God is more interested in my writing a book than he is in my making soup for my husband? I don't think so. I don't think God makes any difference. He doesn't make a distinction between so-called secular work and spiritual work, provided it is done by one who loves him and offers up that job at that time. There are times in my life when I have to sit at the computer, peel the onions, iron the shirt, clean the toilet. I'm a housewife too, believe it or not. I don't spend all my time running around having fun. But any job, whether it is speaking to a group of earnest and eager women like this, which is such a privilege, or the mundane things that nobody's ever going to notice as long as you do them. Isn't that definition of housework? And what if you don't do them? Everybody will notice. Right. So I offer it up to the Lord of glory, and then he transforms it into a holy task. Amy Carmichael said, if by doing some work which the undiscerning consider not spiritual work, I can best help others, and I inwardly rebel, thinking it is the spiritual for which I crave, when in truth it is the interesting and the exciting, then I know nothing of Calvary love. If I cannot accept the humble, hidden task as gladly as what the world would call spiritual tasks, then I know nothing of Calvary love. May God enable us to transform our minds. Her mindset was completely transformed. Another thing that the world is telling us is you have a right to yourself. Have I? Not if I want to follow Jesus Christ. A follower of Jesus Christ is prepared to give up his rights. That's what it means to deny yourself. It means to give up your right to yourself. And Jesus said, if you want to be my disciple, you must give up your right to yourself. And then take up the cross and then follow. Three conditions of discipleship. And giving up my right to myself is relinquishment, isn't it? Open your hands. Let go of those things that you're clinging to so tenaciously. Are you prepared to lose your life? Just two nights ago, I was speaking further south, and a lady came to me after everybody else had gone, and I had signed all the books, and she hung around, asked if she could speak with me, and we went back into the church sanctuary and sat down, and she just started in, pouring out this terribly sad story about the miserable marriage that she'd had for 33 years. And she said, I have made up my mind that I'm going to get a divorce. She said, I know it's not biblical, but I think the Lord will understand why. And she went on and on, giving me a long litany of all the terrible things that her husband did and all the things that her husband ought to do that he doesn't do and how miserable he was and how they just couldn't communicate with each other. I'll never forget hearing that amazing woman, Oprah Winfrey, say on TV one day, if I hear that word communication one more time. And it is probably the most common complaint that wives have, their husbands don't communicate. Well, this lady went on and on and on, and I thought, I wonder why she wanted to talk to me. She's not asking my advice. I mean, it was getting kind of late at night, and I had signed the books, and Lars was packing up the books in the foyer, and I thought, why is she telling me this? So after a while, when she finally took a breath, I said, is there some way that I can help you? And she said, I wish there were, but she said, I've already made up my mind what I have to do. And then she was off and running again, on and on. Well, finally, she did sort of give me an opening by saying, well, don't you agree, or something like that. And I said, no, I don't agree, because what you're trying to do is to save your life, to save yourself. And what does Jesus say in this passage? If you save yourself, you'll be lost. And she said, well, what does that have to do with what I've been telling you? Well, I said, you are determined to save yourself. You are not willing to lose your life in order to love this man. And Jesus said, if you lose your life for my sake, which means giving up your right to yourself, laying down all your rights, then you will find life. Think about it. Does it make sense to open your hands, to relinquish, to let go of all this anxious determination to do things your own way? Are you afraid to open your hands? Are you afraid that Jesus is going to take it all away? Well, he may take away a lot of things, but he is going to replace them with something so glorious, so unspeakably wonderful, that you will wonder how you could have ever hesitated. He wants us to transform our minds. What are the small desires in your life? What are the big ones? What are the things that you long for that you feel as though you're never going to be able to reach? What are your preferences? I would urge you this morning, my dear sisters, to start learning the gracious, quiet way of giving up small preferences. There are probably one or two tiny suggestions that most of you wives would have for your husbands. You might be able to think of just some little way in which you wish he would change. Am I ringing any bells out there? Now, if you've been married to him for 3 months or 10 years or 40 years, you've probably already begun to suspect that you're not going to be able to change him. And you are looking at a woman who has had severe testings along these lines, because God has given me not just one husband or two husbands, but three husbands. Did you know that? Number one was murdered. Number two died of cancer. And number three is with me today, as far as I know. I don't see him right now. I'm certainly hoping that he's going to outlast me. They were very different men. Very different. And I have had to learn to submit to three totally different husbands. Only for 27 months with the first one, he died. Only for 4.5 years with the second one, he died. It's been almost 20 years with Lars Grin, and I'm still learning. Well, thank you. But there's hardly a day that goes by that there's not some small preference that I must gladly relinquish. It's no big deal. It isn't as though you're going to remember on Wednesday what in the world you had to relinquish on Monday. It's usually some trivial little thing that you get all upset about and think, well, why don't I ever get to make any decisions around here? Now, of course, don't go out of here and say, Elizabeth Elliot says, wives are never to make any decisions. I get quoted and misquoted dreadfully. But let me tell you what John H. Newman wrote about 100 or more years ago. One secret act of self-denial is worth all the mere good thoughts, warm feelings, passionate prayers in which idle people indulge themselves. I'll read that again. One secret act of self-denial, and we don't go around parading our acts of self-denial. One secret act of self-denial is worth all the mere good thoughts, warm feelings, and passionate prayers in which idle or lazy people indulge themselves. Now, we sang, and I trust each one from her heart, worship and praise songs this morning. What is the only valid test of our love for Jesus Christ? There is one valid test. Jesus does not say, if you love me, sing about it. Now, of course, he loves to hear us sing about it, but that's not the valid test. He doesn't say, if you love me, pray about it. He doesn't say, if you love me, write a poem about it. He says, if you love me, do what I say. Those are solemn words, aren't they? In other words, obedience is the acid test. Am I prepared to do what God is asking me to do? Whether it means accepting my singleness for today. And that is a tough one, isn't it? I receive so many heartbroken letters from young women, many who have never been married. They're getting to be 30, 35, 40, 45, and they're saying, where are the men? In another place, a little further south here, just the other night, I sat with a group of young single women, and they were saying to me, where are the men? There are no men. Well, last night we were on the Queen Mary. We saw what some men are doing, bungee jumping. They haven't got time to get married, or they're hang gliding, or they're scuba diving. You know what the Apostle Paul said? When I became a man, I put away childish things. Now, what could I say to those dear women, godly women, all of them? I can't say, well, you got to change those men. You can't do that. They are going to have to answer to God. That is God's business. What your husband is doing or not doing, what those single men are doing or not doing, is not our business. If we are wives, the word is clear for us. Submit to your husbands. If we are single, God's word is perfectly clear that we are to accept this moment. Yesterday's gone. Tomorrow is not here. I have this present moment in which to see my mind transformed. And of course, one of the things that looms so large in the minds of these single women who are pushing 30 and 40 is, but I want children. My biological clock is ticking. Where is the man? Well, of course, Jesus might come tonight, right? And all that worry is for nothing. And all that worry is for nothing anyway, because Jesus has forbidden us to worry. If your mind is filled with worries, it needs to be transformed. Trust me, he says. I know what I'm doing. Lord, you have assigned me my portion and my cup, and have made my lot secure. Do you feel that God has made your lot secure? Well, many of you don't. You're feeling very insecure and very edgy. And to those young women, I pointed out to them, the thing that is really bothering you is not that you're single tonight on this particular Friday night or Thursday night, whatever it was. It's the future. That's what's bugging you. If the Lord came along and said, next Wednesday, I'm going to introduce you to a husband, you would be perfectly at peace, wouldn't you? Most wonderful thing in the world. But Lord, you have assigned me my portion and my cup. It is here, in this place, in this state of marriage or singleness or divorce or widowhood or whatever it is, God wants to reveal himself to you. And he says, will you trust me? Will you love me? Will you praise me? Make those secret acts of self-denial. I have a newsletter that comes out every other month, and I wrote a little piece in here about a lady that was one of the many, many mentors in my life. I have been so blessed in having so many godly women who have shaped my life. And I'll just read you this whole thing, because I think I put it more succinctly than I would if I tried to ad lib. When the Tamiami Champion, which was the name of a train back in the 1940s, when the Tamiami Champion pulled into the Orlando Railroad Station one hot day in September 1941, a very tall, slim, dark-eyed lady in white was waiting for a new pupil of Hampton Dubose Academy. She picked me out at once, a tall, very shy, blonde girl of 14, wearing, of all things, in Florida in September, a beige felt hat. We all wore hats in those days when we went anywhere, and a blue wool dress in Florida in September, and brown suede pumps. Hello, said the lady, you're Betty Howard, and I'm Miss Andy. We're so glad you're here. Of course, you guessed my maiden name was Howard, and I used to be called Betty in those days. Please don't call me Betty. She took my suitcase, led me to a station wagon, and drove me to the seedy old hotel in which the academy was then housed. This was the beginning of 3 years of boarding school, a school the like of which no one would believe. There were about 100 students, one third of whom were MKs, missionary kids, one third PKs, preacher's kids, and one third OKs, ordinary kids. I was one of the latter. The school had been founded by Pierre Wilds Dubose, who had been a missionary kid in China and had a heart for those like him who were separated, often at an early age, from their parents. They made a home for all of us. All the teachers I found were unsalaried, living day and night in the dormitories during the school year, in cabins at a camp in North Carolina in the summer. Miss Andy lived in the dormitory with us girls. Daily we saw lived out the high principle of Jesus' words in Matthew 25:40. I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me. She, like the other teachers, showed us the meaning of sacrifice. She laid down her life for us. Love always means sacrifice. Miss Andy was a woman with a gentle and quiet spirit. May I see the hands of those of you that were born with that? I see one hand. Oh, I think she's signing over here. I don't see any other hands. I don't think we're born with a gentle and quiet spirit. But Miss Andy was a woman with a gentle and quiet spirit, a radiant smile, total selflessness. She not only taught school, she planned the menus, did the shopping, and countless other errands. When the school lost its only two paid employees, the cooks, it was Miss Andy who took over the task, not neglecting her teaching responsibilities. How was it possible? God knows. In 1950, Dr. Dubose asked me to come to teach public speaking, taking the place for one semester of another teacher, his daughter, who was having a baby. I was Miss Andy's roommate during those months and was allowed to call her Jane. Far more intimately than I had had opportunity to observe before, I now saw in humblest ways what true sacrifice means. Jane was available to any and all who needed her at any time of the day or night. She and Dottie, Miss Hill, were often working on whatever needed to be worked on. If the phone rang at 3 o'clock in the morning, it was Jane who answered it. If someone needed to be driven somewhere, Jane was the chauffeur. She had to be up and dressed by 7 a.m. or earlier, 7 days a week. She taught Bible classes not only to students, but to Mrs. Dubose's church women. She prepared their elegant teas and the Christmas buffet supper, a lavish affair to which friends of the school were invited, and students were trained severely beforehand to serve. Jane was always, and always will be to me, an icon of love, loving kindness, and a quiet, hidden selflessness. On the last day of her life, she taught school as she had done for 59 years, and then cooked dinner. Like the woman who poured perfume on Jesus' head, she did what she could. As I review the life of my beloved Jane, it seems to me that she did what she couldn't. But we know from whence came her help, the Lord who made heaven and earth, who promised, as thy days, so shall thy strength be. It may be that the Lord is asking you to do something that you are absolutely convinced is impossible. And that was certainly the case with this lady who had made up her mind that she was going to get a divorce. She had decided it was impossible to live another day with that man. But I also reminded her of that passage from Matthew 25:40. Inasmuch as you've done it for one of the least of these, my brothers, you've done it to me. Do you want to treat Jesus the way you are treating your husband? Because remember, your husband is one of Jesus' brothers. That gave her pause. She sat silent for a little bit. And I just said, go ahead and lose your life. You'll find it. try it. And I walked out. Do we have a right to ourselves? Are you prepared to lay down your life in whatever way God is going to show you? We often think of missionaries who lay down their lives for the Lord. And of course, many of them have been tremendous examples to me. All my life, I've known missionaries. My parents were hospitable people. My parents themselves had been missionaries. And we had many, many missionaries come through our home. I still have my mother's guest book. It has 42 countries represented in it. And we children were blessed in sitting at the dinner table and hearing firsthand the stories of these missionaries. But it's not just missionaries who are meant to lay down their lives daily. It's you and I. And the second condition of discipleship was take up the cross. And what does that mean? In what form do we expect the cross will be presented to us? Do you think God's going to give you something dramatic to do someday? Something heroic? Very unlikely, isn't it? We're not going to have anything heroic or dramatic to do that people are going to write books about or sing songs about. It's going to be those small, hidden sacrifices. Those little, seemingly insignificant preferences relinquished. The small and hidden ways. The cross is the continual, daily acceptance of small duties which are distasteful to us. That's what John H. Newman wrote. The taking up of the cross is the continual, daily acceptance of small duties which are distasteful to us. Are you the one in this church who can be counted on to do the dirty job that nobody else wants to do because they're not going to get thanked for it? Are you the one that can be counted on in the office to get the coffee when getting the coffee for the boss is not part of your job description? Are you the one willing to sweep the floor, bring the flowers, bake the cake, whatever the little thing may be? And of course, if you do sweep the floor and bring the flowers and bake the cake, you probably will be thanked by somebody, if not everybody. But there will be things to do in hidden ways which will not be noticed by anybody except the one who matters the most, Jesus Christ. Be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Jane, that dear lady that we called Miss Andy, her last name was Anderson, and for some reason she was always called Miss Andy. She never tried to avoid suffering. And by suffering, I mean little things like having what you don't want or wanting what you don't have. And that's a very broad definition of suffering. And we think of suffering as a pretty awesome word. But think of the little things, having what you don't want or wanting what you don't have. Another letter from one of my radio listeners, and this hit me right between the eyes. I saved it. In fact, I have copied it into my journal because it was a lesson that I sorely needed myself. She said, "The most important thing I've been learning to handle in my marriage is to handle my marriage and husband by praying instead of filing complaints that fall on defensive, sometimes deaf ears." Have you thought of praying instead of filing complaints? And you know they're going to fall on deaf ears, aren't they? I mean, your husband is not likely to listen very carefully to what you have to say. "The Lord is more than able and willing to meet the needs I wrongly thought my husband should fill. And while I was never a nagger, I have learned how effective it is to pray and tell the Lord my husband troubles." Have we learned by transforming our minds how to pray and tell the Lord about our husband troubles or whatever other kind of troubles may be bugging you. And listen to this. I've learned to let him intercede for me with George. She has learned to let God intercede. He is the one who stands between us. Well, of course, I do hope and pray that that bitter woman that I talked to a couple of nights ago has paused before beginning the divorce process. Do you feel that yours is a hopeless case, that you are helpless, and that you have already made up your mind to do one thing that you're not really sure God wants you to do? Let me remind you again of the words that the Lord gives us in Matthew 15. If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. The denial of self is the surrender of preferences. The taking up of the cross is the continual daily acceptance of small duties which are distasteful to us. And of course, it is also the acceptance of the big trials and tribulations in our lives. And that was a great principle that I learned also from that missionary to India, Amy Carmichael. She wrote a poem called In Acceptance Lieth Peace. Some of you may know how my first husband was killed. It was by a tribe of Indians in South America. He and four other American missionaries were all killed at the same time, 1956. And when I received the radio message, where I was on my jungle station, that my husband was missing, God brought to mind those words of Amy Carmichael, "In acceptance lieth peace." I had to accept the fact that my husband might be dead. 4 days later, we learned that they were, all five of them, had been speared to death. And I thought of those words, "In acceptance lieth peace." Now, what does it mean? How do we go about making this kind of surrender? I would strongly suggest, if you're anything like me, and I am very much of the earthy, I am not somebody floating around up in the clouds and real spiritual. If you think so, why, just forget it, because there's nothing like that in me. I need all the help I can get, and because I live in this physical body, it helps me to use physical gestures sometimes, and to accept that which is anything but acceptable in your worldly mind, to accept it by the transforming of your spiritual mind, it might help you to do what I do sometimes, which is simply to get down on my knees someplace alone and lift my hands up to the Lord and say, "Lord, you know this sorrow or this disobedience or that nasty thing this person said to me or this terrible piece of news that I have received, whatever it is that's destroying your peace. Accept it." And just lift it up to the Lord and say, "Lord, I receive this in your name because it didn't happen for nothing. And I offer to you." Remember what Jesus said when he was hanging on the cross? "Father, into thy hands." And of course, he couldn't move his hands. They were absolutely immobile. But these immobile hands, he was saying, "Into thy hands I commend my spirit." May God transform our thinking in accordance with his own. God bless you.